Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We are back here in our 8 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. All right, NFL wildcard weekend has passed us. Texans beat the Chargers 32-12. Ravens beat the Steelers 28-14. The Bills on Sunday beat the Broncos 31-7. Eagles beat the Packers 22-10. And the Commanders beat the Bucks 23-20.
Yeah. Also, you'll have a Vikings-Rams tonight at 8 o'clock. I think I'm hoping that one's good because, like we kind of talked about at the top of the show, I don't want to call them snoozers. They weren't snoozers, but really, last night's game was the only one that you were like, oh, man, I got to see the end of this, you know? And so I think tonight's game will be really good. Obviously, the Rams have a number of players who have been in these situations that have made playoff runs, that have done a number of things, and the Vikings are good, and we know they're good. So it would be interesting to watch them kind of come together tonight. But, yeah, I thought it was a fun weekend. You mix in the college football playoff Thursday and Friday night with the NFL all over the weekend, and I know that, like many of our listeners, I was glued to the screens watching all these matchups go down.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed the Packers Eagles game. I mean, know that it wasn't because to me it was the second best game of the weekend behind the Washington Tampa Bay game. But it was kind of that old school playoff feel where the defense is really dominated. I mean, I thought Jordan Love was brutal yesterday. I know that they were dealing with some injuries, but I mean, there was some really questionable decisions with the football. You know, he made his first throw across the middle. You know, not to change the subject completely, but Tom Brady, I don't have near the issue everyone else has with him because he's really trying to give information. The one thing, if Tom Brady was to come to me and say, hey, Squid, and I was like, what's up, TB? He's like, what do I need to do to get better? I'd be like, just stop. Stop talking like you know you're talking in front of millions of people and just have a regular conversation. He's trying too hard to say the perfect thing, to say it where everyone understands exactly what he's saying instead of just talking about the game. And it feels like someone who's uncomfortable talking.
Well, I was going to say, I think those types of things come with a level of comfortability. The problem is I don't know that we'll ever get there with Tom Brady because I don't see him. With everything going on with the Las Vegas Raiders, I don't know that we ever see a comfortable Tom Brady in a broadcast booth. I don't know that he gets that far, even though he's making great money.
How about that they fired Tom Telesco over the weekend,
he
right,
did. Tip? That did happen as well. I was going to say, as someone who has had to get comfortable in front of the camera over the years, like when I first started, and this is what he doesn't have, and this is what a lot of analysts don't have until they get more reps, but when I started, I had zero reps, and you just get thrown into the fire in a small town where everybody says, oh, you'll be here for 2 years, and then you'll be moving on to the next city once you get better here and learn. So you get that experience. So it's not an easy thing to do to be – I'm not saying he's been thrusted into the fire, right, because he's got a hell of a contract
kind of stuff, right? He got some practice games.
I was going to say, I was at a one-year warm-up.
Exactly. So, but it's still not easy when you haven't had a ton of reps. And a lot of guys will go to the NFL. They'll do a broadcast boot camp for players. And so I've talked to a number of guys that have been out there before, and they learn a lot in those cases. Someone like Nate Burleson actually started off in the broadcast boot camp. So, but again, it's Tom Brady. Obviously, he's good at everything he does. And maybe for you, it will get better.
Well, I don't have near the issue with it that most people do. I think he'll be running the Raiders in 2 years. I mean, he basically is the reason Tom Telesco got fired. He said, we need to start over because he's an ownership, and Mark Davis is listening to him a lot. I think he might be very influential in who the next GM and head coach is there. But what I would say, you know, the weirdest thing for me is when networks pay analysts just and play-by-play guys this ridiculous amount of money. Now, I want the quality to be good, don't get me wrong. But how many people were watching Green Bay and Philadelphia yesterday no matter what? Did anybody tune in to say, man, I want to hear what Tom Brady thinks about this game? People were watching
NFL's the game. King, dude.
Yeah. You don't give a damn who's doing the game. I mean, honestly, if you hate it, if you don't like it, then mute it. Most people are probably watching and they have their little parties and stuff. So they're going to watch it anyways.
I was going to say, more times than not this year when I've watched NFL games, I've either watched them on mute, I've played, you know, obviously I listen to, you know, Arch and Wes, you know, when watching Falcons games. I don't hardly ever pay attention to what Tom Brady is saying or Collinsworth or Troy Aikman.
I have never.
I just don't.
Well, look.
Appreciate you, fam.
I have never tuned into a football game because who was doing play-by-play.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And, you know,
I've watched the Manning cast at times because I think they're funny.
Well, and you hear a lot of blowback on like Jonathan Vilma, and I'm like, I mean, yeah, I tuned
well, he's
in.
He's awful.
I tuned in one time to hear what some of our fans and listeners were saying about Jonathan Vilma, and I listened to it for about 10 minutes, and I was like, nope, they're right.
Yeah, because
I can't deal with it.
Because you're a Falcons fan listening to a Saints player kill your team because he's a Saints player, and because he's still that's like if Sean Payton was doing Falcons games. It would be hard to take what
Why are you looking at me with all due respect?
Well, I know that you hate already, it when I attack Sean Payton, but also yesterday they pretty much had
you're
to cut
attacking
him
my
off.
Profession, but continue.
No, I'm not. No, you're a sideline reporter. You're not a play-by-player and
you
analyst.
You the broadcast. You
you're
broadcast.
A journalist. I don't mute it. I've never watched them.
Hey,
I don't have.
Continue,
I don't get to watch
continue,
them.
Continue.
I'm normally doing games, but it didn't matter to me who was doing what Tom Brady was bringing. I was watching the game. To watch the game. I was going to watch it no matter who was doing it. Yeah. That's my point. That's why I don't understand why they pay Tom Brady got the contract he did.
The, what was it, 47 of the top 50 broadcasts this year in the United States for NFL games. I mean, it's like something insane.
Dude.
Something insane. So just to finish up, and I had this Jordan Love stat pulled up because I was going to throw it at you. True dropbacks this season, including yesterday. These are non-play action, non-RPO, non-screen pass, none of that. Just drop back, let it go. Jordan Love, 57% completion, 15 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, 77 rating. For context, that's 26th in completion percentage, 27th in passer rating, and the worst touchdown to interception ratio among all starting quarterbacks. So you're right. I mean, he wasn't special yesterday. And by the way, that's courtesy of Underdog Fantasy.
Ding.
Brett Coleman on Twitter. So I think that's really interesting. They've got to grow. They've got to find some different ways to do things, but I just thought in a lot of ways they got bullied yesterday. So we'll see what comes of that. But I know that, you know, Green Bay Packers fans, after a great season in a very tough division, are wondering kind of what's next. It feels like that has to evolve at some point.
Was that Nate Tice stat?
Or Brett Coleman.
No. The Nate Tice stat about Jalen Hurts. Did you see this one?
No.
That yesterday it was 2nd and 8. From their own 24, I think, in the first quarter. It was the play that we saw earlier. It was his first time he'd ever been under center for a drop back pass that did not feature play action. That is the wildest.
Say that again.
So yesterday on 2nd and 8 from the 24 in the first quarter, it was 7-0. They were on the Green Bay 24. Jalen Hurts dropped back from under center. And it did not feature play action. And that's the first time in his NFL career.
That's an unbelievable stat. You're telling me yesterday for the first time in his entire career in the NFL, he had a drop back from under center.
Without play action.
Without a play action. That's insane.
I've never heard of it. I didn't.
Shout out
and
to Nate
somebody
Tice
tried to call him out on it, and he goes, it's 100% true. And
I believe Nate Tice. And Nate Tice was Mike's son, by the way, ding, used to be a scout for the Falcons when I was up there, and I 100% believe that to be true. God knows what he's talking about, watches more film than probably anybody in terms of researching NFL quarterbacks. So he's pretty special in that realm.
Yeah, that's just an amazing stat. I couldn't believe it. But Jalen Hurts wasn't great yesterday either. I mean, the quarterback, give the defenses credit in that game. They muddied the water so much. There wasn't – Lamar was good. I thought Jaden Daniels was really good last night. Baker for the most part, but the quarterback play was a little bit iffy this weekend. And that's the defenses. That's why when we talk about who the Falcons should hire the next DC, it's important. The very few of the teams in the playoffs had bottom tier defenses, and there's a reason for that. All right, let's get to our man up Monday.
Friday we picked the semifinal game that was being played Friday night. It was Ohio State against Texas, and I think you and I were on the same page, if I'm not mistaken, on this one.
Yep, I'm pretty
and
sure.
We were both extremely close to probably losing what was. I think we had it at Ohio State -6.5.
Thank you, Jack Sawyer.
So here's what I had to say. I think Ohio State is the best team in the country right now. They have shown nothing in the last two matchups that lead me to believe that this game is going to be anywhere close. And I like Texas, man. But let's be really honest with ourselves when we look at Texas. When they've played elite talent and elite speed defensively, they've looked very average. They got through the season. Their only tough matchup was against Georgia. They almost lost to Vanderbilt. They lost to Georgia again in the SEC title game. They could have easily lost the matchup they played last round. I like everything Steve Sarkisian's doing. I don't think this Texas team is as good as they were last year. I think they're going to come up short. I think Ohio State's going to cover that one.
The story of this team is yet to be told. No great accomplishments are ever achieved without going through adversity.
There's a victory lap for me right there, and it's a good thing because I'm pretty sure I went 1-1, but go ahead with yours.
I mean, which one do I do? My good or my bad?
Go ahead and knock that Ohio State out.
All right. Dylan, let's hear what I thought about the Ohio State game. I think Ohio State wins easily. I do not know what gear Ryan Day found, but it looks unstoppable for Ohio State. I think they cover the 6.
Well, I can't say enough about Jack Sawyer. He just became a legend in Ohio State.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, well, what did you do with the Washington game?
What's funny is going into it, I really felt good about Washington, and when I saw the Vegas line that the Bucks were favored by 3, I let Vegas talk me out of it.
I'm still confused on that.
I would have, without looking at that line, picked Washington. Now that I'm looking at that line and seeing Tampa favored by 3, Vegas knows, okay?
Idiot.
Vegas just knows. In games like this where you have a certain inkling, I mentioned it. I am impressed with Jaden Daniels. I'm not really that impressed with Washington's offense. It is Jaden Daniels. When they get in bad situations, Jaden Daniels bails them out. So it's not like they're just, you know, hey, this is a well-oiled machine. No, it's Jaden Daniels freestyling and getting after it. I am going with Tampa Bay minus the 3 points against Jaden Daniels and those Washington Commanders this week.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok, and flat out deceived.
Bad deal there.
All right, Dylan.
What'd you have to say?
Quickly get to my bad. No, just play it. You don't have my pick for Washington?
There is no. Oh, you want? It was good. You got it right.
I know. That's why I wanted you to play it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks for playing along.
Don't worry about it. I don't need to hear the victory lap.
But what I'll tell you is I told you that I was shocked that you would allow yourself to be bamboozled by Vegas because the bottom line is you get 3 points for being at home. That means they thought that game
Vegas
was
was spot on. It's just the handoffs and the snaps that
messed them
up. They
thought it was a pick 'em, and you should have went with that. You should have went with your gut. Always trust your gut, son. I got it right. So I went 2-0 in the weekend. I'm closing in on you. I might run out of time, though. Anyways, that's it for Man Up Monday.
Dave Archer next here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here on the show. Good morning, Dave.
How are you? How are we doing? We get football overload? Are we drunk off of football? I mean, how are we doing?
Well, I am, and I gotta listen. Let's just start here. I'm watching videos of London Fletcher and Bram Weinstein in the Commanders booth reacting. Bram Weinstein, and I'm like, dude, I'm a little bit jealous that that's not Wes and Dave reacting to a playoff win, man. We got to get there eventually, man. But what'd you think of the playoffs games over the weekend?
Yeah, I thought there was some good action, Mike. I thought that, you know, certainly some of the stuff we talked about on Friday, you know, kind of came to bear. You get to this time of the year, and can you take the ball away? Can you run the football? Can you create those moments in the red zone? Either you punch it in or your defense rises up in the red zone and gets stops. And all that kind of came to bear in these games. And it was fun to watch teams battle back and forth. It sucked that we weren't part of it. I thought we were as good as a number of these teams that were playing, but we didn't get it done, you know. And so you have to watch, and hopefully, as Raheem said to me on Monday at his coach's show, that his players watched and it ate at him and it stung and all the things that are negative about not being in were part of the weekend for them, that they want to be a part of this next year, you know, and you hope that, you know, that's not just talk. You hope that there's something there that's some resolve that gets you into that mix.
Well, Arch, what did you think about how aggressive Dan Quinn was? That really stood out to me. I've seen guys go for it, but they even said in the broadcast, he's going for it every time it fits into his their predetermined plan, which was based on down and distance and where they were on the field.
Well, they were concerned, Bo, going into the game and talking to a few people around their operation, where they were concerned about how well Tampa has held the football during the regular season. Tampa was number three in the league in time of possession, and they were concerned about if they didn't, you know, maximize their opportunities, that they weren't going to see the ball. As it turned out, they dominated the game in time of possession. That was Tampa's worst game of the year as far as being able to control the clock and the ball. And I give Dan a ton of credit for sticking to his guns. But his young quarterback, again, showed the poise that he has. I thought he made a number of plays that you kind of scratched your head about, but then he also made a number of plays that, you know, you said, wow, okay, that's the guy that we saw in that last weekend of the season that can make all those plays late in the game. But they've been in a lot of those games. And so I think there's something to, you know, the experience of not really being overwhelmed with the point, the fact that we're in a one-score game or we're behind and we've got to win it at the end. I think, was it the seventh time that they've had to win the game in the fourth quarter, seventh or eighth time this year? And so they looked very comfortable in the situation. I thought on the other side, Tampa looked a little sloppy. Obviously, the play by Baker Mayfield, where the timing on the jet sweep, whether he was supposed to hand it off or was he supposed to keep it there and play action off of it, I don't know. But certainly the mistake that led to their demise.
Dave, I know we're going to bring it closer to home in a minute, but still talking about the Commanders and Jaden Daniels, the close games that they've been played in, I mean, that's got to be incredibly difficult for any quarterback, but let alone a rookie quarterback, and he doesn't seem to be fazed by anything. Just how special is he?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, Tiff, they've empowered him, you know, not only physically but mentally. I think that there's a great deal of trust. I think that he and Cliff Kingsbury have something really special between the two of them as far as their thought process. I think he gets the opportunity as a young quarterback to share what he likes, what he feels. A lot of times as young quarterbacks, you're kind of just told to shut up and do what we tell you to do. And I don't think that's the case there. I think there's a collaborative effort there to get him involved and make him feel comfortable. So I think that that's where some of his comfort for late in games go together. And then there's just that innate thing that he's got. He's got that it factor to where when he's late in the game, he wants the ball in his hands. He wants to make plays. But, you know, special is certainly a word that should be used with him. I think he's only going to become better as a passer. I mean, certainly his abilities to create and do things outside the realm of what is designed is there. You can see that. And then his ability to make plays within the confines of what they're trying to call, he seems to keep growing every week. So, yeah, Washington's got a gem at quarterback.
Arch, have you ever read a self-help me book on the sidelines during an NFL game?
What's in a self-help me book?
I don't expect that. There's nothing that dude does that I think that kind of catches you off guard. You know, I think that there's just about everything you want out of AJ is going to happen on a sideline. No, I had never seen that before. I've had guys that I played with Jim McMahon, who was a zany guy. I remember he was signaling plays to me. We were both in Philly together in a preseason game, and I looked over and he had a slice of pizza in one hand and he was signaling me to play in the other. That he brokered a deal where he signed a football and gave it to a fan, and the fan went up in the stands and bought him a brick oven pizza and brought it down. He was eating it on the sideline.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah, there's I've seen stuff, but I don't know if I've done the self-help book. That's a pretty good one.
And it was a self-help. It's called Inner Excellence, about getting the most out of your mindset. Self-help. Yeah, that's anyway. Self-help.
There you go. You want to deflect all the pressures that are going on. I'm gonna settle into myself here.
Yeah, I love it. That's man. Good. I love it. Somewhere. I'm just picturing him in a book club on Monday afternoon. Arch, I want to talk, obviously, about the Jimmy Lake firing. And obviously, I think a lot of people thought you had to move on from Jimmy Lake. I don't necessarily want to focus on Jimmy Lake just yet. But, you know, you move on from him, the defensive line coach. What do you think it was that really was the death knell for both those jobs? Was it the two overtimes the last couple of weeks? Was it the sack percentage? Was it some of the busted coverages you had after, the Broncos game, the Vikings game? What do you think it was that really cemented the fact that you had to move on?
Well, I think it was all of that stuff, Mike. I think certainly you're not going to take one thing and say, okay, this is why you're getting rid of him. I think it's a culmination of all that stuff. I also wonder, Mike, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on when they sat down and they began, because this is a big picture conversation. It's not just, okay, we blew this game or why didn't we do this in this game. I think this is a philosophy and an idea moving forward, because Raheem was very adamant about the fact that they had moved into the 2025 preparation thing. And this was a big part of, okay, what are we going to be from a scheme standpoint? And what are we going to do? And I think there was as much conversation about maybe Jimmy Lake didn't match necessarily what they wanted to do moving forward as much as it was the screw-ups that happened this year. So I think it's a combination of the stuff that you just discussed and just mentioned. But I also think it had to do with, what do we want to be moving forward? Why didn't we accentuate some of the skill sets of some of the guys we have? And does that match with the way you want to call defense? If it doesn't, then we need to move in a different direction. I think ultimately the latter is probably what came to pass as far as looking to 25 and does what he wants to do match what they want to do.
Well, how much does the next DC, where they're looking at the next DC, fit kind of like the personnel stuff? Because, you know, the Lou Anarumo from Cincinnati, he's, you and I even had this conversation off the air, he kind of runs a 4-3. I think he's a hell of a DC, but he runs more of a 4-3. That's kind of been what he does. You look at a guy kind of like Robert Saleh or Ulbrich, and they can run the 3-4 type stuff.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of discussion about the front seven, Bo, and I think that how does the front seven match what they've got from a personnel standpoint? So certainly you can shift gears a little bit, but you can't overhaul your defensive personnel. You're talking about, 30 guys on the defensive side of the ball, and probably 20 of those are front seven guys. So how does that match what a guy like, you know, Anarumo wants to do? I think that to find an edge player or two that can end up being a 4-3 defensive end, do you have guys on your roster that have the ability to play 4-3 defensive end? I think that Matthew Judon is more of a lighter 4-3 defensive end than he is an outside linebacker. Obviously Arnold Lebikadi is more of an outside linebacker than a 4-3 defensive end. So you have to start trying to look at it that way, I think. And can you find guys that are in free agency if you have any money, or are there guys coming in the draft that would fit that bill? You know, you begin to look at the 49er model. I know a lot of people are talking about Robert Saleh. A lot of people are talking about, Steve Wilks. Those guys are essentially 4-3 guys too. You know, if you look what the 49ers do, they're kind of a 4-3 setup as well. So I know that the Jets are a little bit more of a 3-4 look. So I think we get too caught up a little bit in maybe that part of it as far as the numbers go. And you mentioned the key. Do you have guys on your roster that have the ability to morph in and out of those type of situations? Because you're not really talking about 4-3 and 3-4 on third down. You're only talking about those potential scenarios in first and second down. And even in those scenarios, based on the way offenses are playing, about 65% of the time you're a nickel anyway. So you're in a four-down look anyway. So we may get too caught up in the 4-3-3-4 setup. It's just a guy, can he maximize what you got on your roster?
Thanks so much, Dave. We appreciate the insight. You join us this morning.
Good to be with you guys. Y'all take care.
Thanks, man.
That was Dave Archer, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. You can follow him on X @ArcherQB. 16. We've got a Rams-Vikings preview and a Life of Squid just ahead here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and we had an NFL wild card weekend, and things will be capped off tonight in a Monday night football game when we see the Vikings, and as they try to kind of rebound from things, losing their last game of the regular season, they will play the Rams tonight to close out wild card weekend. That game is going to be played in Arizona at State Farm Stadium, and that's due to the LA wildfires.
And this game opened at a 2.5-point favorite for the Vikings, and it has not, it's not moved. It stayed at 2.5. They've been a 2.5-point favorite the entire time. That's a little bit, you know, going to L.A., but I just don't – L.A.'s not really the home field advantage. That stadium is not the home field advantage. Now, if it was in – if this game was in Minnesota originally, this game probably – this means to me what I think is this game would open as like a 6-point favorite.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. That, you know, that place obviously is rocking. I mentioned you a number of times back when they were in the old stadium.
Metrodome.
And I think the Falcons played there in, what, 2009? It's before I got here. I think they played there in 2009 or 2008. And you watch film from that game, and like you, all the players were blurred because the camera was shaking so much because of the crowd noise.
It was probably no. Tim was your first year.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah,
say,
it had to have been 8 then, because there's some kind of, or maybe it was 9, but there's a, you know, it goes like 4 years basically.
Yeah,
or actually it goes longer than. Well, the NFC is a little bit different, but the AFC, you'll go 8 years in the NFC without playing, about playing the AFC teams at their home.
Great home field advantage for Minnesota, but you're right. I'll be interested to see what the crowd is like. I would have expected a Minnesota contingent either way, had it been in L.A., with it moving to Phoenix or I guess, Glendale, to Tiff's point about State Farm Stadium. I expect there's going to be a contingent down there because we all know that Phoenix is, you know, sort of a retirement area, if you will, and a lot of people from those areas up north do move down there. So I expect to see at least a little bit of a Minnesota crowd in that one. But I'm hoping it's a good game because, like we've talked about it all day, a lot of these games haven't been, but you just feel like this one has the look of it. So hopefully the Rams are able to find something. You know, Matt Stafford go to work.
Well, if the Rams want to win the game, they need to bring pressure against Sam Darnold. They need to really look at the game plan that Detroit had last week in the game that decided their division, because they were heating Sam Darnold up early and often in that game. And that's why the Minnesota struggled so much inside the red area. They were just coming after him. So can you dial up stuff? Can you send people and maybe move him off his spot? Now, if you move him off his spot and you don't get home, there are times where they're going to win. We saw that against when we played them, when Justin Simmons moved him off his spot. And then the secondary has a lapse back there, and they hit big plays with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. So that, to me, is kind of what I would do, is I would heat him up. The other side, Puka got really rolling late in the season.
He's an,
I mean, he helped.
Dog.
Now it was a little late for my fantasy team, but he helped me stay in some games.
And really,
this is a big one when you consider the fact for Sam Darnold of what is his future in Minnesota. Yeah. So you saw the locker room responded to him in the game prior to losing to the Lions. I forgot what matchup that was, but and then you have to wonder, okay, JJ McCarthy's going to be healthy. So what's going to be his ultimate landing spot? And he obviously could play himself into a bigger deal if he does win this game somewhere else, or maybe they end up finding a way to keep him. But it seems like they would have had to find a way to keep him given how the locker room has responded to him.
Yeah, and I think that, look, when you look at you know, what they've tried to get accomplished up there in Minnesota, there has, and we've talked about this a couple of times, there is this like middle ground of quarterbacking in the NFL right now that I don't know that we've seen. Tampa does it. Minnesota does it. There's a couple other teams at least making the attempt to, where it's for a long time it was like you either had to be successful, you either had a really good rookie quarterback and you could get weapons around him, or you had a veteran quarterback that was making like, you know, $40 million, $50 million a year, and you were paying him because he was a game changer. These middle ground quarterbacks like a Baker Mayfield that have been able to kind of hit the right gap where they're not making top-end quarterback money, and a lot of that money is going to other positions – but, you know, they are still playing quarterback at a high level. I think Sam Darnold kind of fits that role. I think he's going to get some money At some point, it'll be curious to see what that quarterback room is moving forward, because obviously they've invested in J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, and I think they like what they saw from McCarthy early in the preseason, what they got. But, I mean, sign him to a two-year deal, Sam Darnold. Like, kind of, Baker signed a three-year, $100 million contract with Tampa Bay, which was, he got $50 million guaranteed. I'm not sure how much was fully. Why not sign him to a two-year version, or maybe really do a three-year and 1 year be a void year if you want, for Sam Darnold, and let J.J. McCarthy develop. And if Darnold hits a snag in the road, kind of like Kirk Cousins did, you kind of give yourself an out where it only hurts you for 1 year. Or he could just go sign somewhere that might be willing to really pay him big-time money, because it's not a great quarterback. It's perfect storm for Sam Darnold, and this is the year they did it. He's proven he can play. It's not the best NFL draft year for quarterbacks, anyways.
That's a good point. It's a really good point.
He's on a team where, hey, they could let J.J. McCarthy sit a couple more years and hope that they get the Jordan Love type effect that is seen in Green Bay, other than yesterday.
Well, do you think the fact that it's not a great quarterback draft means that Sam Darnold would be off, would be lured another place if possible?
Well, he's got to make it to free agency before he can be lured.
I know, that's what I'm saying, if possible. I don't know, man.
To your point, Tiff, I know you've had these conversations. How many deals get done at the combine? Because
a lot.
It's what, 2 weeks before free agency?
Yep.
And agents talk to GMs, like, if you were to want a quarterback, would you want a quarterback
<You're right. laughs>
that did all this, that just did this?
What kind of mold are you looking for?
Those sound really similar to Sam Darnold's numbers.
Yeah. What if his name rhymed with Cam?
Yeah. And what would you pay for this man? Well, I would do, because remember when the news broke last year about Kirk Cousins and the Falcons were looking at a veteran? They came out that they really, really heavy in on Kirk Cousins, and it came out at the combine. Then all of a sudden, there is the tampering, what could have been a multitude of things, which most likely I think was basically they had contact after they had agreed on the deal too early, based on what I read. But
yeah, and there goes your fifth round pick. A lot of that will happen too at the Senior Bowl. I'll never forget showing up at the Senior Bowl and all the people that you would see talking to one another at the Senior Bowl. It was like a mini version of what happens at the combine. And you roll up to valet and Pete Carroll's talking to Thomas Dimitroff or whoever, it's just like they're just waiting on their cars to be pulled around. So there is a lot of that kind of happening behind the scenes. And it's where a lot of the deals do get made, because believe it or not, a lot of these guys do know each other, So it's interesting to see it all play out.
I know I normally say a little bit of W Sauce, but I use a good bit of Fireshire made by the W Sauce. Well, I'm not like make yourself sweat heat kind of guy. Like, I don't want to be on fire the entire time I eat something, but I want a little bit of kick. And so I've taken
take that back. I said you look like someone that didn't like spices.
Well, but it's not like over, like I want to taste all the flavor, not just the heat. Okay. Right.
Okay.
And so I got my chili recipe from my mom, and so I've taken it and I'm starting to tweak it a little bit now. And so I use Fireshire and all my ground beef that I cook for it, because I couldn't get any venison. Although one of our listeners hit me up and he apparently has venison and elk, so I probably need to.
You don't want to brave the snow to go get that man's elk?
Well, I didn't want him to have to brave the snow.
That's a good point.
No, I was trying to be a caring.
I'm very thoughtful of you.
Yeah, sure. I'm a very caring person.
Oh, really?
Yes, very much. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but I am. But anyways, perfect kick. Fireshire is so. The Fireshire is so good when you're cooking your meat, as I should say, and you really get the flavor and a little bit of spice out of it. Also, you're stuck in all weekend, New Realm Owl Inn Lager, phenomenal. The official beer of Kennesaw State Athletics. So I'm getting in to a little bit of the college basketball season, because the games are on and there's less football on.
It's time.
Obviously I pull for Kennesaw State and I pull for Florida. Those are my two teams. Florida's been really good so far. I was watching it, and I think that the Tennessee-Texas game came on after the Florida-Arkansas game that I watched. But it was on the other TV because the playoffs were on.
Didn't Florida lose to somebody big?
They lost to Kentucky last week.
That's what it
and
was.
And then they beat Tennessee on Tuesday by 40.
The brakes off Tennessee.
Or 30, might have been 30. And then they beat Arkansas on the road on Saturday. Well, Tennessee's pretty good. They were number one team in the country before Florida just boat raced them. And then they went and played Texas on the road, and they won. But their star player, Chaz Lanier, and I say star, their best scorer, Chaz Lanier, was benched by Rick Barnes. And Rick Barnes kind of set the college sports world on fire because apparently it's okay to ask and say how much you need to pay a roster in college football, but how dare you in college basketball say, well, you bench someone because of the fact that they're getting paid.
I took him out first play of the second half because he didn't shoot the ball. I mean, that play was designed for that shot. And I told him, I said, if you're not going to do what you're getting paid to do, you can sit over here because he is getting paid to do that.
I personally don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. We've had this conversation before on here, and I know that, you know, both you guys have thoughts, but I'm fine with it. I mean, it you don't even hear that, though, in you don't hear that in pro sports. So it was, I don't know if he was, you know, obviously setting the college world on fire because he said it. It's something you don't hear very much.
No, you don't hear it at all. I was kind of taken back when I heard it. So I think, I don't know if I have a problem with it or if I don't. I just know that I haven't heard anybody say that. You haven't heard a pro coach say, I pulled this player out because they're making this amount of money and didn't make the play. No. Fans say that, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, time. And he did say, look, and when he said that's designed for him. And he also went on to say that that he's lackadaisical in some stuff. Like, he's like, I've told him he doesn't have to score the ball to score.
He said that word, lackadaisical.
He's going to have to help those guys by learning how to screen. He has to learn how to cut harder. He has to learn how to do his work early coming off of screens because he kind of gallops a little bit. That's a direct quote from Rick Barnes. But basically, what I heard is, I don't care if you're getting paid. I'm still going to develop you. I'm still going to treat you like you are what you are. And it's like, goes back to the conversation, Tiff, that you and I had about maybe a month or so ago, or maybe 2 months ago at this point now, about...
They're still kids.
They're still kids. Rick Barnes is saying, you can come here and you can make as much money as I do per year. But what you're not going to do is be entitled to never come off the court because of it. And I'm going to develop you to the best of my ability to teach you that just because you're getting paid doesn't mean you are basically and you can't be disciplined, right? I go back to, if you go, anytime you're paid for a job, your boss still has the control. Because if you don't do what you like, they can fire you.
Well,
they can. And
I'd push back on that a little bit, because when that season ends, that player is going to have all the control. And
well,
that relationship between him and Rick Barnes better be a good one.
Well, look, that player could probably sit out the rest of the year right now.
Yeah, that's my
if
point.
He wanted.
That's
so,
my point. So Rick Barnes has all the control, but the player does in a lot of different
but
ways.
But that's what I want to hear. I want to hear that the college coaches still care about the players and the people to develop them. He's literally saying that statement about the screen stuff. He's still developing. He's not an NBA player. So he doesn't get treatment like an NBA player. And I think that's how you kind of can not control, but basically still continue to get that college growth and development out of these young men, young women, young athletes, whatever. Because if everybody takes that stance, you can't just jump ship constantly, because it's going to be the same everywhere.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Morning Shift. Steakhouse is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.